Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So, Mr. Parry,
yes.
I think we are at number 23 now.
23?
On the record.
Now, and where was I brought up?
Where were you brought up?
Yeah.
Chester?
23, Laurel Grove.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so
see?
You think that's some kind of amazing coincidence?
I do, yeah.
Exactly. Well, it's also the same number between 24 and 22.
Yes.
You know, any other famous things you think about 23? Was it David Beckham's shirt number 23?
No, David Beckham actually was 7.
I mean when he went to, like, Real Madrid, was he not 23?
Who cares? You know.
What do you mean, who cares?
Was he left Manchester United? He wasn't going anywhere, was he?
Keep using that cab. You should pay that cab driver.
Yeah,
for that,
maybe I should.
There was a guy in New York who said, "When you're leaving New York City, man, you're going nowhere.
You ain't going nowhere."
Now we've been talking about a great many things in America,
yes.
And somebody suggested that we transcribe this podcast and make it into a book.
Yes, that's right.
That sounds like a good idea to me.
I think our friend Brian YI,
Brian, our production,
yeah, that's right, was
supremo.
Was floating that idea, and I have to say, it's not a bad one.
I think it's a very good one.
He's got some good ideas, that boy.
He has got some very good ideas.
Okay, good.
Now,
I wanted to ask you about, because we veered a little bit off the American path, so to speak, in these, what we call OTRs, the on the records.
Well, you call them OTR.
Yes.
I don't like calling them OTR.
What
I call them on the record. That's the proper name.
Well, OTRs to me, I mean, I like the, you know.
Yeah, see, I don't like...
The BBC, the CIA.
No.
You know,
I don't like to make acronyms out of everything, because otherwise it starts to get really boring.
Well, I have so much to say in life that if I can spare a few seconds by acronyming an organisation than I do.
Oh, see, I didn't realise you were in the business of trying to make what you say more brief, because I can help you with that.
Yes.
You know, I can interrupt you more.
No.
I can cut you short.
A lot of people who've seen the New York show say that you interrupt me a little bit too often stage at that
who,
show.
Who was saying that?
A few people that
I've spoken to say it was a really great show.
It was a great show.
In fact, the reason that it works so well is because you on your own are just a mouthpiece of doom, gloom and despair.
Not
whereas when I'm there, I make you better.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, I'm the one who's done shows on his own for a fellow radio station, Talk Radio, and the audience went up by a multiple of 4.
Oh, I don't think
four
so.
Times.
Yeah, no,
four
I don't
times.
Think so.
No, it did.
Yeah, well, so it went from like 3 people to 12, did it?
No, it went from about, you know, like
those shows were appalling
to a million. No, they were great.
You had a million listeners on Talk Radio. You're just lying now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I think
they don't have a million listeners on Talk Radio.
They did when I did it,
no.
Believe me.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. Before that, we do the on the record next week.
Yes.
I'll pull the figures and see
good
how
idea.
Close to a million you got.
That's a great idea. Well done.
Why don't you talk about something more realistic now?
Now, I'm going to talk to you about something that I've been musing over the weekend because with all the action going on in America and Hillary Clinton's book coming out that's been serialised now.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, I can tell you something very surprising.
Mm-hmm.
She's coming to this country in the next week and she's going to be given an honorary doctorate at a university in the United Kingdom.
Which one?
Well, what would you think? You know, a woman who nearly became the President of the United States of America.
Well, you'd assume that it
might
be...
Former Secretary of State.
Yeah, you might
former
assume
First
that it would,
Lady.
Be, it would either be Oxford,
yes.
Because, of course, they had the Rhodes Scholarship with Bill Clinton, or possibly Cambridge.
Yes, that's right.
Is it neither of those?
Do you guess where it is?
Is it in London?
No.
It's not Nottingham Polytechnic, is it?
No, it's not. The University of the Trent.
No. Where is it then?
But it's worse than that.
No.
It's the University of Swansea.
Is it?
Yeah, she's getting an honorary doctorate and she's
University
going there.
Of Swansea.
The University of Swansea, yeah.
Has anybody told her that's not in England?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't
really
know.
Where is Swansea?
Yeah.
You can imagine her getting off the plane at Heathrow.
Yeah.
Why are we driving across a bridge?
Yeah, that's right. What is this water below here and what is this landmass we're coming to? What did you say? Wales?
Yeah.
Well, what is Wales? Yeah, absolutely.
Is that
in
the United Nations?
Well, considering she was Secretary of State, she should really know it's an independent country. But, I mean, Wales has never acted independently in the terms of foreign affairs, so she probably wouldn't.
Well, good on the University of Swansea for managing to bag her as a guest of honour.
Now then, talking about the First Lady, the former Secretary of State, the would-be President, she said that she made a terrible mistake not getting into power and...
well, it wasn't really her mistake.
And has, you know, landed this huge problem on the world called Donald Trump.
Well, I think she'll go down in history, will she not, as the woman who gave the world President Donald
That's
Trump.
That's right, she will, yeah, she will, you absolutely. Know? But of course, she comes originally from Chicago, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does, Illinois.
Illinois. Yeah. Spent a lot of her life in Arkansas because her husband, Bill Clinton, was the governor of Arkansas. So,
he was from that part of the world, wasn't he?
Oh, he was born and brought up in a place called Hope.
Hope, yes.
A little town just outside Hot Springs.
I remember they used that when I was at the, you know, his nomination at the Democratic Convention.
They still believe in a town called Hope?
And they made a little film. I think it was somebody, like, it wasn't Martin Scorsese, but it was somebody really famous who made the film.
That's right.
A Town Called Hope.
That's right.
It was great, actually.
It was,
that whole
convention
thing was tremendous.
I went and did a row around Arkansas, you know, when I was following him on the election trail, and you went to Little Rock, where he was governor for all those years. And before that, he was attorney general.
Yeah.
I went to Hope, and I got a picture of myself standing by, you know, the city limits.
Really?
Hope, yeah.
You
that's
should
right.
bring it.
Well, my mother's got it, so next time I'm in Bournemouth, I'll go
and
get
it. I could Photoshop it for you and turn it into Hopeless.
Hopeless, that's excellent. And also to Hot Springs.
Really?
And Hot Springs was, in fact, a mafia hangout.
It's
where people like, in the 30s, people like, what's his name, you're from Chicago, you know.
Al Capone.
Al Capone used to go, and they used to sit in Hot Springs, because there were natural spring waters in all these hotels, you know. And so the mafia sort of moved there on holiday.
It's a spa town.
Spa town, that's right, absolutely right. But anyway, so that was all Arkansas.
Yeah.
Another reason why Bill Clinton, of course, spent a lot of time in Arkansas was because his wife was a senior partner of the Rose Law Firm in Little Rock, and therefore fully occupied in a job. While Mr. Clinton...
He got her that job, didn't he?
Well, she was very highly qualified law. She came
out of
Yale.
But I mean, I presume he was connected
politically.
Was it
Harvard? Where did they meet? Yale or
Harvard? I think it was Yale Law School.
I think it was Yale Law School, yeah.
I think that, because she went to university, I think, in Illinois, in Chicago.
Yeah, but they both ended up at Yale Law School
they
after they'd done their first
university.
I believe so. Yeah, that's right.
But what I'm saying is that she would have gone back with him. He was politically connected. So
yes, that's right, yeah.
Because all the law firms and the political outfits are all connected.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely right. And then they took half of the law firm with them to Washington when they became president and first lady, and they became.
In a funny way, the only person who kind of replicated that, and it wouldn't be surprising to know that he did, is Tony Blair, who replicated the whole idea of having a wife as a lawyer.
That's right.
Her sort of fellow lawyers his advisors.
And half his cabinet, and Lord Chancellor.
Cabinet, and all of the people that they all kind of hung out with.
Yes, that's right.
Coming from the same chambers.
That's right, absolutely, yeah. No, that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
So, but the other reason that Bill liked the arrangement was because he used to go off jogging. But the jogging was really horizontal refreshment.
Nature.
That's right.
Horizontal jogging.
People like Jennifer Flowers and people like that, you know, and dozens of other women. In fact, when I...
But this is the thing, isn't it? When people run, and you always find at some point or other in a presidential race, somebody drops out because of something that somebody finds out.
Well, you mentioned monkey business, didn't we?
Well, we had monkey business with Gary Hart, yeah. But there was the other guy...
Hart Pence.
Was the other guy? I can't remember who dropped out a couple of races ago because his wife had cancer. Edwards, I think it was. Wasn't it Edwards?
I think it was.
He's a Democrat. And
was,
his wife had cancer. It turned out he was having an affair
with
a woman who was filming a documentary about
it. I know. It was
just horrendous.
It's horrendous
stuff.
But
it's always the case, isn't it, in America, where somebody like Bill Clinton emerges.
Yes.
And I remember at the time when he first emerged, nobody had heard of him.
No,
nobody
had heard
of him. In a general country place, right? But then suddenly all these people started climbing out from the woodwork saying, well, this guy is an inveterate shagger.
That's right.
You know, I'm afraid.
There was one woman who was attached to Bill Clinton's staff and a full-time job was to get rid of all the claims from women against Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
It was her full-time job.
Mm.
She had a file, like, you know, of 30 or 40 women who claimed that they'd, you know, had some kind of relationship with Bill Clinton. She was called, head of Babegate. That's
really?
Right. She had to, you know, she had to deal with all the claims from women. And the first inkling I got of it was the first time I went down to Arkansas, you know, because I was the first guy who spotted that Clinton could win.
There doesn't appear to be any evidence.
I thought George H. Bush.
You're not going to tell me that you were ahead of George Gordon in any story in America.
I think I probably was on this one.
Really?
Because George H. Bush literally said to people, the only guy we've got to get rid of is this guy Clinton. What's his name? Clinton.
Well, was he not the first part of what was called the six-pack? There was five other sort of Democrats.
Yeah,
they were,
and they all fell out for one reason or another.
Any more famous than he was.
No, no, that's right. You're absolutely right. He was a great orator, and when they had the presidential addresses, the nominee addresses, it was on the Democratic side. He was the great orator. He's the guy who had very expressive hands and this very sincere looking face.
Yeah.
But I went down to the Capitol Hotel in Arkansas, and I was in the main dining room first night I got there, and I said, oh, hello, and I started chatting because I thought, well, he's the governor, he probably uses this place. Mm. And I said, do you see much of Governor Clinton? And the lady said, not if we see him first, sir. Yeah. I said, oh, really? I said, I thought he's quite popular around here. I thought he was like Mr. Arkansas. Mm. Yeah, well, the problem is, sir, he comes in here with his boys, and we have to be very, very careful how close we get to those guys, you know. What she was insinuating was that half of Bill Clinton's staff used to come in there and thought that, the waitresses and everybody else were there to be molested.
I thought it was good enough for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was good enough for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And she said, some of his people are terrible people and all that kind of stuff, But anyway, so that's Arkansas, right?
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you, we're going to talk now about what's our favourite state in America.
Are we? Okay.
I would think Arkansas.
I'm sure Arkansas is not your favourite state in America.
It's probably the least favourite because I think it is officially, and believe it or not, it rises up above Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama. Right. I think it's the poorest state per capita, per head. I think it's the poorest state.
I must admit, when I went to that Mississippi sort of state penitentiary or federal penitentiary where I saw the electric chair, which you talked about before, I don't think I'd seen anything like that poverty that I saw in Mississippi, in northern Mississippi, just south of Memphis, Tennessee.
Sure.
People were literally living in corrugated iron huts.
Yes, that's right.
In the middle of this kind of, what looked like a kind of almost a wetland type forest.
Sure. Well, I think the reason Arkansas was so poor is they had some of the these guys who live in the woods, backwoodsmen and all this kind of stuff.
But all those are deliverance types.
Yeah, deliverance types. That's right. But also, that's right. Yeah, but it's the first time I ever came across the mud cake, and the mud cake is what poor people eat.
I thought Mississippi mud cake is a dessert, isn't it?
No. Yeah, it is. But I mean, that's Fancy Dan stuff now these days. That's
Fancy
the name.
Dan.
Who
are you?
Who are you?
Who
are you? Fancy Dan's? but that's the actual name of a recipe. A bit like a rock cake.
Yes.
It's not really a rock.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But the Arkansas mud cake was made of mud dug out of the ground.
What?
It was centuries old.
How can they eat mud?
They eat mud in Arkansas. They do. I'm telling you, they do.
That sounds like one of your more far-fetched stories.
No.
Get me the foreign desk immediately. They're eating mud in Arkansas.
Mud in Arkansas.
Really?
They would dig mud out the ground and they would bake it like a cake in the oven. They would eat it. And no, they would.
I've never heard that.
It started off because people's bones didn't have enough nutrients in them.
Uh-huh.
And the mud in certain parts of Arkansas have got like gold in them and this kind of
stuff.
They'd
just be better off eating each other.
No.
It's a cannibal.
No, don't be ridiculous. No, apparently there's so much natural vitamin in the soil in parts of Arkansas.
Right.
They used to bake the mud cakes and eat them. I'm telling you, they did. They did,
Well, did they have any sort of accompaniments with the mud?
Well, I don't know. I've never eaten one. I've never been offered one.
You should have tried to seek one out.
Well, I didn't because, I found it a very strange situation. Mm. However, if Arkansas to me was not the most attractive state, the most attractive state for me has always been Connecticut.
Yes.
And I love talking about Connecticut at this time of the year because, of course, in this country, we are in autumn.
Yes.
In America, we'd be in the fall.
In the fall.
And the fall in Connecticut is spectacular, as you well know.
I'm not sure
if you've ever been up there and stayed there for a few days.
Well, my sister
the fall.
Has a house there, so, I mean, I've been there pretty much all the year round.
Yeah, sure.
And also, my ex-wife was from Connecticut.
Oh, right.
Just outside of Danbury.
Right, Danbury.
Just off Route 80, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Route 80? No. No, Route 495, maybe.
Well, soon you should say it's Danbury, because I used to go to Waterbury, where Ivor lived, right?
That's right.
That's where his house was. It used to belong to, our...
Dudley Freeman.
Dudley Freeman, that's right. Our horizontal refreshment friend.
That's right, in
who
France.
Who had a penchant
for
young Polish ladies, usually very attractive
as well.
Well, I don't
think they're actually Polish. I don't think he cared where they came from.
No, but they were Polish.
Most of them did come from Polish. They're all friends, I think.
Yeah, he seemed to employ a lot of Polish ladies in his research office, so to speak.
But there was always one that was out to kill him.
Well, there was a hole in... I went there around there once. There was a hole in the door, and I said, what was that then, Dudley? And he said, one of the damn Polish girls. He said, tried to attack me with a stiletto. You know, luckily I just closed the door in time, but the stiletto came through the door. That was
I told you I went to stay in his chateau in France. Which was incredible because he sold the house to Ivor in Connecticut, which I think he sold for about $375,000.
That's
something.
Right, yeah.
And he bought, it wasn't actually a chateau, it was a manoir, which is one down from a chateau.
Yes.
So when I went to stay with him, it was like, oh, you can have this wing over here.
Was there a moat?
There wasn't a moat, no, but there wasn't. But it had its own chapel,
right? Okay,
and it had like its own swimming. It was beautiful. It had its own swimming pool. And it was a sort of. It was an old Louis the 16th hunting lodge, or
right?
Something like
okay,
that.
Yeah.
And he bought it for the same money, and done it up. And he had one side of it where he kept his office, and then his wife and sort of family lived in the other side.
Yeah.
And she was very French, and
she used to call him Le Marapeur, which is French for butterfly.
Yeah, that's right.
He's butterfly.
He will do what he does. He's like a little boy, but he will always come back to me.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right. Yeah.
And he still had the Polish girls working for him over there.
In fact, it's Mariposa. I'm sorry. Believe it or not, it sounds like a Spanish word. But Le Mariposa, rose, like a little butterfly. That's right. Yeah. But he was your uncle, Guy Dudley, because I had lunch with him once at... he had his offices in Waterside,
wasn't Waterside Plaza,
Waterside Plaza, that's
there
right,
there was
one
restaurant there where I think I would have had the same lunch
that's
with
right,
him,
yeah.
which was incredibly drunken.
That's right, and you have a steak. Mm. That's all they kind of do, really, steaks. You sit
it's
there.
It's a godless, kind of soulless place, though, wasn't it?
It was more like a cafe, but it was a restaurant.
But I mean, the whole kind of Waterside Plaza...
Yeah, it is.
It was like
I agree.
A university campus.
That's right, yeah.
On the side of the East River.
That's right.
It was bizarre.
It was bizarre, but it's crazy. Story. He was on the Sunday Express in England, you know, and his patch was in Northern England, and he shacked up with some lady, you know, in the course of investigating some story,
right?
And he took her away in the office car, and then they got intimate in the car in a lay-by,
as you do,
as you do.
Do you know what sort of car it was?
Well, it would have been, you know,
Viva.
No, the predecessor to the Ford Cortina, I suppose, because the office car. Mm. And
had a love affair with Lena in the back of my Cortina.
Well, that's right, something like that. But as they were fumbling around in the back seat, she suddenly said, "Oh my God," you know. And he said, "What's wrong, darling? You know, you're unhappy about anything." She said, "Yes." She said, "Another car's just pulled up behind us." He said, "Well, don't worry, they won't know what we're doing." She said, "It's my husband." And Dudley managed to get out of the car, half clothed, with his wife in the car, and talk this bloke out of punching his face
in.
He's a very charming man. And made some ridiculous story, you know, about needing her help in some undercover story, you know, that was going
to... Well, to be honest, I mean, one of the reasons I think that a lot of us were drawn to journalism was not necessarily because we knew that that was how it was going to be, but that our characteristics are not dissimilar.
No.
And in those days, it was very easy to be, you know, under the radar. You know,
that's right,
there's a reason to say, "Look, sorry, I can't make it tonight, darling, because I've got to go out on a job."
Yes,
and,
that's right.
You know, you couldn't be reached. You're sitting in a car all night.
No mobile phones in those
days. You can do
anything
you liked, really.
Yeah.
Well, nobody ever asked the question.
Nobody ever knew where you were.
No.
And that's why people often got caught out. I remember once at the Daily Express, in fact, one bloke was playing away from home.
Yeah.
So he told his wife that he was on a job in one coastal town. This again was in the north of England. I worked the Express in the north.
Right.
Somewhere like Bridlington or something like that. But he told his news desk that he was off to do a story in another town.
Right.
And I think it was Whitby.
Okay.
And you always had to leave the phone number and address of your hotel because there were no mobile phones.
Right.
So... anyway, they eventually tracked him down. They got a message to him to ring in. So he rang in, even though he was in Bridlington, but had told the news desk he was in Whitby, just in case his wife rang to find out where he was.
Yeah.
And...
Oh, so he didn't want her to track him down?
No, definitely not. No. But he thought some idiot on the news desk might have given him away because he had to give the news desk where he was.
Right.
So, but he wasn't even there. He was in another hotel. You see what I mean? And so he said, it's Jeff here in Whitby, you know, on the undercover story. Yeah. All right, Jeff. Yeah, well, it's very good of you to get in touch.
Yeah.
You obviously got our message. Yeah, somebody else. He said, okay. He said, how is it in Whitby, Jeff?
Yeah.
He said, well, it's fine. You know, he said, I can't tell you what I'm working on just yet, but I realise. He said, great, okay. He said, which hotel are you in? You're in the Grand? He said, yeah. Always stay in the Grand. Right. Yeah, great, okay. You're in the front, room at the front? Yes, room at the front. Good. He said, are you looking out the window? Yeah, look out the window. And he said, what's all this about, Stan? He said, just go and look out the window. He said, And, you know, had to take the phone to the window. And he said, go on, describe it to me.
Right.
He said, well, what's that, Stan? He said, The pier's on fire, you bloody idiot. Oh, right. He was in Bridlington. He wasn't in
Too far away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely shocking.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so much kind of deception that went on.
Yes, that's right.
And it was that kind of job that deception worked fine.
Exactly.
In a lot of situations.
Yeah, exactly.
But most of the people always did their jobs very well, but they were often never where they said they were supposed
to be. I totally agree. You know. So getting back to Connecticut, right? So I loved it because I used to go up there and stay with Ivor, and autumn was always a good time to go.
Yeah.
Summer had gone. You know, I hadn't gone on summer
not
holidays because
so
I don't like them. It's not so hard to get up there, and I used to drive up there and all kind of stuff. Mm. But Doreen was one of my best friends in America. That was Ivor's long-departed wife.
Yes.
God rest her soul. Doreen, she was lovely. And former runway model, you know, very lovely lady. And
very proud of the fur coat she used to wear.
She had a couple of fur coats. Yeah. She loved the fur. I think a couple of those were extorted from Ivor for, you know, relationships
for
that were extramarital.
Various
and all
activities,
that. But no, we used to go out and have lunch in Litchfield, you know, in Connecticut.
Very nice
and,
place.
Waterbury.
Which I think is where Meryl Streep used to live. I don't know if she still
does.
Yeah,
I think it was around there somewhere. Mm. It's where George lived on the other side of Litchfield, didn't he? Yeah, it's white clapperboard. Mm. Beautiful place, that,
George's,
by the way.
Yeah,
he had like acres and acres of land.
I never saw his house, actually. Oh, I used to play golf up there with him up in Goshen.
Yeah.
But I never actually saw the house.
You could walk for 20 minutes and you're still on his land and come across a herd of deer, which were on his land, and a river. It was a fantastic place. He had places like that in America.
I think he still lives there.
I think he does. I haven't spoken to him for a while. But no, what I was going to say was the place that I really loved best was a place called the Yankee Peddler.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Yankee Peddler was a coaching inn and a colonial, you know, restaurant stroke hotel.
Because Connecticut's one of the oldest states
of course
in the
it is.
Union, isn't it?
Of course
it's one
it
of
is.
The original 13 that
it's
was
one of the
founded before sort of independence.
It's where the Independence War was located. I mean, it's the HQ of the Independence War.
Yeah.
And if you remember, there were three nations fighting. The Americans, as they had formed themselves in Connecticut, the French and the English.
Yeah.
So the war all centred around Connecticut. But this was fantastic, you know, a colonial coaching in the Yankee Peddler.
Yeah.
And you walked in, there was a roaring log fire in a huge hearth, you know, in the main room as you walked in. And they sell mulled wine in the winter, and it was snowing there once, and it was about -10, and we were all located in the Yankee Peddler. Just, you know, brilliant memories of cold nights in the Yankee Peddler in Connecticut.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a few of those types of inns.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're dotted all over Connecticut.
They are, yeah, yeah.
And it's a beautiful, you're right to say that it's a very beautiful
Well, I better give you your chance to tell me what your favourite state is.
What you mean? Because now we've got about 3 minutes left on
the
podcast. Well,
you know, I just thought that you didn't want to.
Yeah, but you've been rabbiting on for about 20 minutes.
Well, maybe I have.
No, I think best thing to do here is to hold on to my
and maybe talk to you. All right,
state,
okay.
And I'll talk about it next time.
Well, I think this is a very good idea because my other favourite state, and for no particular reason except that it's got an outstanding town in it, is Nevada.
Nevada?
Yeah.
Why?
Because of Las Vegas.
Really?
Because Las Vegas, I mean, I don't actually like staying in Las Vegas for more than about 2 days.
Las Vegas is a massively different and changed place, though, since when we were there.
It certainly is, but I have been there more recently, last couple of years, and it's so loud and brash. You know, if you want to say to somebody, I tell you what, if I had a hell of a day, I'm just going to have a quiet dinner somewhere.
Yeah.
You can't in Las Vegas.
No.
You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
It's impossible to find
It's a bit like, do you remember when we were in New York recently?
Yeah.
And we were going through Times Square at sort of 4 a.m.
That's right.
Not like the old days on the way home, but actually on the way into work.
That's right,
to go to the studio
to
do a show for Talk Sport. And it was so bright because now the neon lights are no longer just neon lights.
They're brighter than daylight. They're brighter
than
daylight.
It's like being in an artificial daylight studio.
It is,
in the middle of New York City. I always got the impression with Las Vegas that it was like that.
You'd
be walking, you wouldn't really walk down the streets, but it was so bright all the time.
Yeah, I know.
That it felt like it was daylight all the time.
But everywhere you went, there was either somebody on a fruit machine or the noise of a roulette wheel or some music blaring out of somewhere.
Yeah.
You simply cannot go anywhere quiet in Vegas.
Right.
So the reason why I say it's my favourite is it is a jewel in a desert, and there's nothing else in Nevada, nothing else at all.
Well, it's Reno, which is quite
big now. It is, but I mean, it goes into the shade of Las Vegas and the shadow of. But just because Las Vegas is Las Vegas, and I first went there about 35 years ago, and I still remember staying in the Holiday Inn on the Strip, opposite Caesar's Palace, and you could walk up and down the Strip in 20 minutes, right? Well, now, it would take you 2.5 hours.
Yes.
It really would.
Well, the first hotel I stayed in down there was an old sort of, I think it was called the Sands. It was one of the old sort
of Frank Sinatra's. Oh, the Sands was Frank Sinatra's. They knocked it down.
They knocked it down a few years after I stayed in it.
That's right.
Because I was down there. Funny enough, we talked the other night about the guy who lost his arm.
That's right.
When he fell under a train.
Ken Jones.
He was there.
So it was a fight, was it?
It was a Barry McGuigan fight.
Oh,
Barry McGuigan lost to that Mexican guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who was just a
Cuerto,
you know,
or something.
Yeah, I can't remember what his name was. But, I mean, you could see that he was was acclimatised to the heat.
That's right.
And Barry McGuigan wasn't.
He nearly melted in that fight.
He did.
It was in the car park of Caesars.
It was in the car park of Caesars,
yeah, that's right.
And I'd never seen anything like it.
No,
it was amazing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But my great memory of Vegas was when I was flying back out of that from that trip.
Mm.
And I was at the airport, which is quite big and often parts of it very empty.
Yeah.
And I saw this couple sort of walking towards me, looking quite sort of stylish, and I couldn't quite make out what it was. But as they got closer and closer and closer, I realised it was James Brown and his wife, the one he used to beat up all the time.
Yeah, that's
right,
yeah.
And he's wearing
so you recognise her from the bruises on her face.
I recognise him from these massive black black sunglasses, which were half the size of his head.
Right, yeah.
You know, and she was wearing massive black sunglasses, presumably to cover up whatever
bruises,
it was he'd done to her.
Yeah.
And they sat in complete silence, right opposite me. And I just thought...
In the airport?
Yeah.
And flying to where? To New York?
I don't know where they were going.
No,
we were in a part of the airport where there was hardly anyone sitting.
Right, okay.
And I just thought to myself, this is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me.
Yeah,
I'm sitting opposite James Brown.
That's right.
And I didn't say anything to him.
No.
I just watched him.
Yeah.
You know, what an incredible man.
Couldn't see his eyes because they were behind his sunglasses.
No, exactly. Mm. But he was wearing like high-heeled boots, you know, leather trousers.
Sure.
I mean, very sort of, you know, James
Brown. He was real James Brown, yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's do... because we're pretty much out of time.
Yeah, okay.
Let's wait until episode 24.
Okay.
I'll keep everybody in suspense.
For your favourite state.
For my favourite state.
Sounds brilliant.
Or tales from the dark side.
Excellent. But as they were fumbling around in the back seat, she suddenly said, "Oh my God," you know. And he said, "What's wrong, darling? You know, you're unhappy about anything." She said, "Yes," she said, "another car's just pulled up behind us." He said, "Well, don't worry, they don't know what we're doing." She said, "It's my husband." And Dudley managed to get out of the car, half clothed, with his wife in the car, and talk this bloke out of punching his face
in. He's a very charming man.
Yeah, he's a very charming man. And he's got some ridiculous story, you know, about needing her help in some undercover story, you know, that was going
to... Well, to be honest, I mean, one of the reasons I think that a lot of us were drawn to journalism was not necessarily because we knew that that was how it was going to be, but that our characteristics are not dissimilar.
No.
And in those days, it was very easy to be, you know, under the radar. You know,
that's
because
right,
there was
a reason
to say, "Look, sorry, I can't make it tonight, darling, because I've got to go out on a job."
Yes,
and,
that's right,
you know, you couldn't be reached. Mm. You're sitting in a car all night.
No mobile phones
in
those days.
You can do anything you liked, really.
Yeah. But the Arkansas mud cake was made of mud dug out of the ground.
What?
It was centuries old.
How can they eat mud?
They eat mud in Arkansas. They do. I'm telling you, they do.
That sounds like one of your far-fetched stories.
No, no.
Get me the foreign desk immediately.
They're
eating mud in Arkansas.
Mud in Arkansas.
Really?
They would dig mud out the ground and they would bake it like a cake in the oven. They would eat it. And no, they would.
I've never heard that. But then suddenly all these people started climbing out from the woodwork saying, "Well, this guy is an inveterate shagger."
That's right.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.